Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the commentary tower here at Donington Park, where we were earlier on in the year after a Scott Redding treble in the Bennetts British Superbike Championship. And here we are again, Shaky Byrne and Greg Haynes for the latest Shaky Show after a Scott Redding double. Well, he's done it again, hasn't he? And he's in an emphatic position now, ready for Brands Hatch.
He certainly is. I mean, what a weekend. You know, I don't know how to put it. I said after we finished Alton Park and we were heading into a showdown, I just said, look, you know, in my opinion, we're going to see the real Scott Redding now. He's done an amazing job of getting through the quirky tracks of PSP, you know, getting through the quirky weather, getting through the, you know, the quirkiness of Armco barriers up the side of the tracks in some places and whatever else. And, you know, he's dealt with that. He's done a great job. When he could win, he could. He did. And when he couldn't, you know, he was on the rostrum, or, you know, certainly right there or thereabouts. And, you know, he's got the first part of the season out of the way, got to the tracks he knows at the most important time of the year, and he's absolutely pulled the pin, and it's 4 from 4 so far.
Well, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably watched the racing, but if you didn't, it was Scott Redding on pole position, Scott Redding winning the two races, fastest lap in one of them. Josh Brooks took the fastest lap in the other, but the order was Redding, Tommy Bridewell, Josh Brooks in race one, Redding, Josh Brooks, Tommy Bridewell in race two. First of all, though, how's your weekend been? I know you were in nice and early, weren't you, here on Friday to record your track piece. You've had a good weekend?
Oh, nice and early. You know what? I used to sleep at the circuits in a motorhome and I never got here this early. I actually had to come in at something like 7 o'clock or 7:15 to record that track piece because we attempted to do it at the end of the day on Friday. And
of course, it was Saturday when you came in early, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. It got too dark. And whilst the guys in the Eurosport edit are very, very clever, even they couldn't make the dark light.
Nice piece, by the way. How do you find it doing those things? Because it's all still quite new to you, isn't it?
Well, that's my, you know, I did one with James Whittam at Alton Park earlier in the year. And, you know, when you're just kind of chatting with your mate about, you know, about a certain part of the track and, you know, you can both relate to it, it's really easy. But when you've got one camera on you and you've got to, you know, get across a few key points, but you've got an amount of time to do that in, I got in a right pickle a few times. I'm not going to lie. It took me, I'd start and then I'd get halfway in, I'd mess it up, and then I'd start and mess it up straight away. And then I'd start and get three quarters of the way through and then mess it right up. And I was like, come on, get yourself together, young man.
Happens though. I remember when I did my media training, they said to me, talk to one person. You know what I mean? Don't imagine you're talking to a load of people, even though there's lots of people watching. Just talk to one person. But it's weird, isn't it? Because you've got the cameraman.
Hold on. So you're telling me you've had media training?
I have had a little bit. I know it doesn't show, does it?
No, it does. Well, do you know what the... You know what?
He's obviously surprised.
You know, the funny thing is, right, you can only compare yourself to people that you respect and look up to. And, you know, one of those people, for instance, if you look at the way Neil Hodgson's come on and, you know, you watch something like that and you think, do you know what? Neil's got really, really good at that. Yet I go out and do my first track piece on my own and sort of talk through it and make a few mistakes and, you know, end up taking, you know, quite a few takes to get it done. But then you watch it back and you think, oh, do you know what? It wasn't great, but it wasn't that bad. And when you think that the guys that you're comparing yourself to have been doing, I mean, look at James Whittam. He is absolutely brilliant on TV. Yeah. I love Whit to bits. so natural, so just chilled out, you know, no stress about nothing. And it really comes across in the way that he does his job on TV. And he's somebody that I really admire and really look up to when it comes to doing stuff like that. But it's not that easy to be that natural when you're doing it for the first time. Yeah, you know, it's pretty tricky. And I, for one, certainly haven't had no media training.
It's funny because I realised over the years with that sort of thing, I think it's a bit like riders in TV. You get people who are a lot nicer in real life, you know, real life in inverted commas, than they are on screen. And some of the other way around. But James Whittam is one guy who's exactly the same, isn't he, on the telly as he is in real life, let's say.
Well, to be fair, it's one of the reasons, you know, working alongside Matt Witt, James Hayden and yourself, obviously. It's one of the reasons I really enjoyed this job, because we are all just, you know, four mates that get on real good, and, you know, we can have a giggle and take the mickey out of each other and take it on the chin. And it's almost unfair to call it a job, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of research goes into it, but you're right. You've got to look relaxed, and you've got to be having fun. Otherwise, you know, who at home wants to see someone who looks miserable to be doing it? You've got to get some positive energy across. One thing I was just looking at, just to underline the dominance of this new Ducati, it was 8 seconds back to the first non-Ducati in race one and 9 seconds in race two. Obviously, it is the best bike on the grid at the moment, but what a first year that new V4 Panigale has had across the board.
I actually think that the results were going to be ever so slightly different. I watched qualifying, obviously, and saw what went on, and Bradley Ray was a bit of a standout guy for me. Obviously, he qualified third. He was on the front row of the grid, but had a problem with his bike. And Luke Mossy, we had him fourth. Brad looked to have the pace to kind of, you know, certainly hang on the back of the Ducatis, if nothing else. And you are right, you know, when you see an 8 second gap back from the first Ducati and then you see a 9 second gap back in the second race, it you know, it makes it look like they are completely dominant. But you know, watching Brad start from 19th on the grid, I think it was in race two, and then come through to sixth, and just, and I mean just by 0.00, miss out on a top five or whatever. I think we could have not necessarily seen the result we saw from him at the start of 2018, but I think he was the one guy that was possibly going to be able to take it to the Ducatis.
I think what Brad Ray's done, certainly the last few rounds, and we've seen it with Arrow Bautista, I think, in a negative way, unfortunately for him earlier in the year, is how much of this game is in the head. I mean, I don't know what percentage you put it down to, but it's a mind game, isn't it?
Well, they say that a happy rider is a fast rider, and you know, you need the right people around you. You know, my years, I've been fortunate enough to build a team of people that I actually wanted, and a bunch of people that were all extremely good at their job. But you know, for me, a team has to win together and lose together. I think we've had this conversation a few times, and it's about putting the right people around the right rider, and you know, allowing the riders to just enjoy riding his motorbike and trying to, you know, trying to win races.
Ryan Vickers, I think, deserves a quick shout out just as we go down the results here. He's had a really solid weekend, hasn't he? He was in a really positive mood, wasn't he, when we did that Facebook Live on the Eurosport Player and on the Eurosport Twitter on Saturday morning, rather. But he's coming, isn't he? Bit by bit, he's had some nasty accidents and injuries this year, but he's getting there now, I feel.
Yeah, he is. I think he's quite a talented, special young guy. You know, he's certainly one of the bright hopes for the BSP Championship. I don't know what his plans are for next season yet. He's one guy that we haven't heard any rumours about. Maybe he'll stay where he is. Maybe he'll change. You know, you'd have to say that the Royal Air Force and Reserves team are a great team at developing young talent, and you know, it'd be good to see him stay there. But you know, he's managed by a very experienced guy in Roger Burnett, and you know, they'll obviously be ticking all boxes and covering all bases and seeing if there was somewhere else that you know, they could send him into to try and make him or allow him to take that next step.
Yeah, Roger Burnett, who incidentally took the very first World Superbike pole position here at Donington back in 88 and never took another one after that, Roger. But yeah, he's very much involved, isn't he, from a managerial point of view?
Yeah, you know, I think he sees that he's got a great prospect in front of him, and he's very good at spotting talent. I mean, he's had Neil Hodgson, hasn't he? He's had James Tozlan running with him. Who else has looked after? Danny Kent for a while. So, he's worked with some really good guys.
Another standout performer for me, Shakey, actually, funnily enough, it seems a bit silly to say this, but didn't race, but Taylor McKenzie. I thought the way he adapted to the Tyco BMW, you know, from a layman's point of view, from my point of view as a non-rider, to come in, knocked his brother, didn't he, unintentionally, I guess, out of Q3 to go ninth on the grid. A nasty crash in the warm-up this morning, and then a really nasty crash, same place, coming through Coppice in the Stock 1000 race, concussed. Luckily, though, nothing more than that. But Taylor was looking really good. It's a shame we didn't see how that would have gone on the Tyco BMW.
Yeah, it is. It was quite impressive. I mean, Taron, his younger brother, is having a bit of a tough time at the minute, isn't he? I mean, he's made it into the showdown, which is great, but the wheels have kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit since the crash back at... where did he break his wrist?
Well, he had a nasty one at Brands and Thruxton, didn't he?
Thruxton, yeah. You know, he's more than capable of winning races. He showed that at the beginning of the season. You know, that team are as well. And, you know, they've worked really hard to, you know, to give him the best possible package. But, you know, you just, you touched on it with Bradley Ray and with Alvaro Bautista. But, you know, a lot of this is in the head. And you know, all Taron wants to do at the minute is get back that feeling of being able to ride at the front and, you know, enjoy battling with the guys. But it's proven particularly tricky. But we're going to a track now, actually, the next round of Brands HGP, where he's always shone, always looked really good. And hopefully he'll kind of refine that form and look forward to getting on the 2020 version of the R1M.
What was the gap now when I think back? Do you know the year you went into Brands some way behind Leon Haslam, 2017, wasn't it? What was the points gap?
33 points.
33. So if we look at it now, it's 28. So we're in the same ballpark there between Scott Redding and Josh Brooks. Tommy Bridewell, 65 behind. There's only 75 points left. So it's mathematically down to those three. Tommy's an outsider, I think it has to be said. Can anyone really see past Scott Redding now? I know anything can happen, it could rain or whatever, but it's not going to be easy to beat him now, is it, surely?
I don't think it was easy to beat him, to be honest, you know, from the word go. The way that guy's come in, yeah, it always seems like we big him up a lot, but, you know, he has my complete and utter respect. You know, to come from MotoGP, it could have gone one or two ways for him. He could have come back and, you know, his head could have rolled off his shoulders and you know, disappeared up his own backside and done nothing. Yeah. Or he could have come here and done the job he's done and been the sort of consummate professional, timed everything to pretty much perfection. I hate sitting here saying, but I feel kind of like, told you. Do you know what I mean? I told you. You know, we had this very conversation, didn't we? You know, you put all your eggs in that basket, but what's going to happen is they're going to hatch and, you know, he's going to saunter off somewhere at the end of the year with a BSB title under his belt. And, you know, it looks like that's pretty much exactly what happened. But
fair dues, by the way, because you also predicted a Scott Redding double for Donington. I thought, oh, Brooks, you might be able to beat him in the first one. But that was Magny-Cours, wasn't it, last week? You said Scott will do the double and he did again. So that's the five races he's done here, Shane, this year. And he's won them all. How should people have seen it then, really? Should they have thought, you can never assume he's going to come in from MotoGP and win, but I guess it wouldn't have looked very good for Scott Redding. And he's not won it yet, has it? We're talking like he's already done it. It wouldn't have looked great for Scott Redding if he'd come in and been an also around this year. It wouldn't have looked very good at all for him or for MotoGP or for anyone, would it, really?
No, definitely not. And I mean, the one thing that stands out for me is when we were here back in May, the 24th or 25th of May, Scott Redding became the X number of BSB winner.
Yeah.
He's now won 11 times in his first season. Kind of puts his season into context. You know, if he goes and I'm not saying he's going to do the triple at Brands, but it's more than possible. If he does that, it becomes a 14-time race winner in 1 year. Now, if that doesn't deserve a championship, then nothing does. Yeah. Yes, you can argue that V4R is a pretty special bike. And yes, it's finished first, second, third for umpteen races this year, and you know, pretty much all of the other guys are already like, well, you know, as long as we're first non-Ducati, then we've done a good job. But at the same time, he still had to beat two very fast guys on the same bike to win those races. So like I said, let's talk about somebody else. I feel like we've done nothing but talk about Scott. But you know, in fairness to Scott, it's because of the job he's done a great job, deserves some recognition.
We should talk about his teammate, Josh Brooks, of course. Very, very honest once again, wasn't he? As he often is, Josh, actually, in his interviews, to be honest. But again, very, very honest in his interview today. And he sort of just said, I couldn't do much about him this weekend.
Yeah, but Josh, that's Josh. You know, the positive thing for me this weekend, and, you know, It's fairly common knowledge that he and I don't get on that great, but the thing that stood out for me this weekend was that Josh come out, you know, all guns blazing. He didn't come out like he did at Assen. You know, in Assen the other week, he came off the back of a crash at Alton Park, was really steady all day Friday in Assen, steady on Saturday, and it took him all weekend to get up to speed, and he just did not look comfortable on that bike. But when Josh is comfortable on that bike, his riding style really suits the thing. This weekend he came out, and I think, honestly, hand on heart, that's the best I think I've seen him ride that bike all year. He looked like the Josh Redding of old. Josh Brooks.
It's a hybrid rider.
Yeah, yeah, he's fast too, Josh Redding.
Yeah, he would be fast.
So yeah, it was good to see, you know. And you know, Josh won't be going into Brands Hatch thinking this is all over. You know, never, ever, ever give up as a rider. You know, that's the golden rule. And the first person to beat is always your teammate. It's just unfortunate that his teammate is one that's, you know, so strong and so fast and so adaptable. But
what might be going through his mind now then, Shane? If we just go back to 2017 again, when you were, 32, was it you said before?
32
points behind Leon Haslam.
33 points tonight to beat him for the championship.
So what was your mindset? Did you go into it thinking, I can still win this? Or did you just go into it thinking, I've just got to win all these races? I mean, what were you actually thinking?
Do you know what? Honestly, we had a few problems in the first two showdown rounds, and looked like I'd fallen apart like a cheap suit. You know, that was difficult for me to take, because I went into the showdown leading the championship and was doing a good enough job.
Yeah.
I was obviously looking forward to the showdown, because, you know, you can't win the championship in BSB until you complete the showdown. But yeah, just like things conspired against us. And I actually, if I'm honest with you, hand on heart, went into Brands Hatch thinking, do you know what? All I've ever dreamt about since I was however old is being a motorbike racer. I'm not enjoying my racing. I've not enjoyed the last few rounds. Obviously, a load of problems, and I didn't know if I could turn it around. I'm not going to lie. It had taken Leon two rounds to build up a 33-point advantage. Yet I had one round to try and overcome that. And I thought, you know what? You're being an idiot. Just go to Brands. Go and enjoy riding your bike. Just go and enjoy being what you've always dreamt of being. And I went there with like a completely different mindset. It was like somebody had taken the weight of the world off my shoulders, and I just wanted to enjoy riding my bike. And I went out and I enjoyed riding my bike from the word go. And I was fast, and I was really fast. I was on pole and Leon was struggling. And you know, I'm not gonna lie, Saturday evening, this is gonna sound like really wrong, but Saturday evening, I knew I was gonna be BSB champion. I knew I was going to turn it around. I just had a feeling. I went to bed that night after winning the first race on the Saturday. Leon had had like a 7th or a 10th or something like that. And I thought, do you know what? I'm winning this. I didn't come there expecting that, but that night I knew. And then I went out and I won the first race on the Sunday. And that took it to a 2-point deficit. And I was just, there was absolutely no way in my head that I wasn't going to win the championship. And, you know, every rider on the grid probably feels like that, but I've never felt so certain of something in my whole career. And, you know, the last race on the Sunday afternoon, I was on the front row and Leon was really far back on the grid, and it was probably the most intense grid walk that I'd ever sat on. But I still had this really positive feeling, and I knew what I had to do. I knew how much Leon had been struggling, and Leon got like the most miraculous of starts. I got not the best of ones, got a bit boxed in through turn one, a bit boxed in through Druids. And Leon actually come around the outside of me at Druids and sort of dropped in front of me going down into bottom bend. And I thought to myself, this just could not be better. I followed the guy around the track and I just sat on his back wheel. I just kept his pit board at plus zero, plus zero, plus zero. Yet the lap times we were doing were half a second a lap slower than the two races that I'd just won, you know, one in the earlier on in the afternoon and the one the day before. So I knew I had like half a second a lap in my pocket, and that's a big, I was not taking a single risk, and I was just letting him hear that Ducati bellow and watching him start to make a few mistakes and, you know, watching his bike start to squirm where he was trying really hard to get away from me. And I thought, yeah, carry on, because, you know, three or four laps from the end, I'm gonna pull the pin and you know, that's gonna be me. You know, when you fight with Leon Haslam on track, you have to make sure that your move is clean and concise, and that you do it in a way that you don't you know, missed the opportunity to, you know, to defend that position you've just taken. Mm. Because he is so tenacious that he'll come back at you. You know, you could be racing at Brands Hatch and he'd come back at you from Donington Park just to make sure that he didn't lose to you. And that's what I love about racing against the guy. But he then went and had that accident and fell off and you know, the wheels fell off my wagon. You know, I was
that,
like,
happened right ahead of you, didn't
he? Yeah, he literally went into Hawthorn Bend so fast, and all of a sudden, the guy that I'd spent all year trying to beat was like in the ground. I knew he was going to hurt himself. You can't crash there and not hurt yourself. But my bike started making all funny noises, and in my head, it was going to break down, and I started making mistakes, and it just absolutely ruined everything for me because I was like, oh my God. Well, what do I do now? I wanted to beat him. I wanted to beat that guy so badly at Brands to nail the championship that I can't tell you how much I wanted it. And, you know, I ended up turning it around and winning the championship. But Josh, you know, enough about me. Josh is going to be going there thinking, well, you know what? Shaky turned around 33 points or 32 exactly. points or whatever. Exactly. You know, it's not over yet. And he'd be more than right to think that way.
Yeah, well, all it would take, and not wishing ill on anyone, but if Scott Redding did have a problem in the first race, didn't score, and Josh Brooks won, there'd only be 3 points between them. So it just goes to show. We've got to talk about Tommy Bridewell then. He's the last of the three who could still win it, Shaky. He's 65 points behind. There's 75 points left. So he's just got to go there and win all the races and hope the other two hit treble, hasn't he? There is nothing more he can do to win this championship.
You know what? I think Tommy Bridewell's a great character. He's a great part of the British Superbike Championship, and he's done a great job this year. I think that Tommy Bridewell actually made his showdown so much easier by falling down in Assen. And I know that's going to sound like a really odd comment, and people are going to listen to this podcast and think, what on earth are you on about? But
I think that every week.
Tommy, yeah, well, I won't tell you what I think about you. Not live on air.
We'll save that. We'll save that for the last one of the year.
Tommy Bridewell really is a rider that wears his heart on his sleeve, you know, and he tries so hard that he almost makes himself, he rides into problems because of it. Now, what he's done by having that crash, in my opinion, is just made things so clear. Mm. Like, nothing other than wins means anything, you know? Yeah. So, you know, if you're a rider that can sit and figure things out, you know, if he hadn't have had the crash at Assen, for instance, it might have been that he could afford to take one second place to such and such, but then he'd need a first or whatever else. But Tommy probably wouldn't work that well in that way. Now he knows that only wins will make it happen for him. And I think he also knows now, after Donington Park, that realistically, it's over. You know, you can talk about, oh yeah, but there's still a chance. There's a mathematical points of 65 and there's 75 up for grabs. But no. Scott Redding and Josh Brooks aren't not going to finish two races. I'm sorry, Tommy, but that's how it is. You've done the best job you've ever done. You know, you're going to have a great championship. If Danny Buchan doesn't have the strongest of rounds, you're going to finish third in the championship. Mm. You know, top three for Tommy Bridewell on a privateer bike in the BSB championship, I think, is a fantastic outcome, and hats off to him for achieving it.
Yeah, we should talk about Danny Buchan, of course, on the FS3 Kawasaki. 13th on the grid, didn't get into Q3. Was quite some way down as well in race one when he's 10th. And then they said, didn't they, on the Eurosport programme today that they made some dramatic changes. And it seemed to work, whatever they changed, because he was 4th in race two. So I guess he's another guy who just wants to go to Brands and end the season on the high with a win, perhaps, and some podiums there.
Yeah, and another guy that it's possible for, you know. Yeah. Tommy Bridewell could go to Brands and win. I'm not trying to say that Tommy Bridewell can't win a PSP race because he did it. He did it at Alton Park.
But he needs other things to happen if he's going to win. Yeah, I mean, he knows that, doesn't he?
To win the championship, he needs almost a miracle. But to win a race, yeah, that's more than possible. And he is for Danny Buchan too. Possibly for Christian Idden and possibly for Bradley Ray too. You know, those guys all run really well there. I mean, the two races in 17, for instance, that I won, Christian Idden followed me all the way home. He could well do that there. It's all to play for still. Danny could go there, like you say, and have a win. A lot of positivity coming for the FS3 Kawasaki team. Obviously, they're stepping up to become the official factory-backed Kawasaki team next year. Going to be a two-rider team, and we still haven't heard too much about who the second rider is going to be. Plenty of rumours and gossip and intrigue flying around. I mean, you're the motorcycle news reporter. Obviously, you're going to let everyone in on everything you know in a minute.
Well, my minute, I am actually, because I think By the time this goes out, I reckon we might know officially. And I've already said before, I think Lee Jackson is very likely to get that ride alongside Danny Buchan for 2020. He's their stock rider, isn't he? So I reckon by the time this goes out, we'll probably know. What do you reckon?
Well, I think it'd be a good move. I think that Lee's had a shot in BSB before. And if Nigel's chosen, you know, to, you know, to give him another platform, another springboard back up into BSB, I think that would be quite admirable, to be honest, because, you know, let's face it, they took Danny into BSB as a, you know, a super stock champion that hadn't quite made it in BSB and sort of worked with him and turned him into a race winner. So trying to do the same thing with Lee Bob Jackson would make a lot of sense. But at the same time, if they're going to be the official Kawasaki, you know, works, you know, factory team, if you like, you know, you'd think they might be able to court the likes of, you know, somebody much more experienced, somebody that could probably push Danny and ultimately have two guys that could fight for a championship. But, you know, Nigel, Darren Fry and the guys in that team, you know, Dave Parks, they're a great bunch of guys and they'll want to do what's right. And, you know, they won't want to sort of all of a sudden get this status and then sort of disappear up their own backsides and have a load of problems. Yeah. So they'll be thinking about it very methodically, I would think. And Matt Llewellyn in there as well, working with Danny. They're just a real good bunch. They actually have my old tyre guy, Jack Metcalf. Okay. He started working there this weekend. And it's really nice to see Jack, because I've not seen him since I finished racing, obviously. But I saw him this weekend to speak to, and I think he's really happy in the environment that they've provided him with. So, yeah, good little team.
Did they not have your old bike as well until this year? Did they not have your ex-PBM 2015 bike, I think it was, until the end of last year?
Yeah, but I bought it back off them.
Got it back again?
Yeah, I've actually got it at home, yeah. You know, it was something that we spoke about at the beginning of last season. Nigel said to me, still got your old girl in bits, and we used it as our reference. And, you know, obviously they had all my data from 2015 when they started in 2016. They said, we're going to build it back up at some point. And I said, well, if it's ever for sale, let me know. And Nigel and I ended up coming to a little agreement, and I bought it back. I've got it. I've had it all painted, actually. Bike paints, the people who paint the bikes for the PBM team, they redid all the stickers, repainted it all. So it's all back exactly as I had it. So that's sat in my garage as a little memento to two BSB titles.
Because obviously a lot of people back home probably don't realise, and I remember talking to people about this in the past, the riders, it sounds silly probably to say this here with you, but the riders don't own the bikes, do they? Unless it's a privately run effort in a smaller class. It's not like the rider, even if you win the championship, by default just gets to take the bike home. It doesn't work like that, does it?
No, definitely not. I mean, I've been asked a million times, oh, do you keep your bikes at home? Can I come around and have a look at them? I'm like, do you know what? My team have a purpose-built workshop and purpose-built racetracks. I'm sure they think you just chuck them in the back of a transit van or something and just rock up here and, away you go and you go and race them. But, no, it's very rare for, you know, certainly nowadays for riders to, you know, to be given a bike at the end of a season or whatever. Yes, you could have it written into your contract, but even then it'd be really difficult to make happen. You know, you've got to bear in mind that they're talking about a cost of those V4Rs, for instance. You know, if Scott Redding wanted to have his bike at the end of this year, if he becomes champion, talking about a buying cost of something like €130,000 for those things. Yeah, that's a lot of money. You know, you think Scott's probably, I don't know what his championship bonus might be. Maybe he's got a $20,000 championship bonus. Maybe he's got a $40,000 one. I don't know, but it certainly won't be $130,000 or whatever the cost of one of those bikes is. And, you know, the last thing you're going to want to do as a rider when you've just won a championship on something is pay a load of money to have that bike to keep, you know. So, funny one, but I bought my old ZX10 back anyway.
God, no wonder we've heard so many stories in the past then about bikes being stolen and things being stolen from circuits and trucks being stolen with bikes in them. I mean, wasn't there an incident, quite an amusing incident, when you were back at Crescent, the Croft incident?
Yeah, well, then bikes got held to ransom. I mean, to be honest with you, they could have kept the thing for all I cared. I hated the bike that year and didn't enjoy the year at all. But yeah, no, riders, I think the thing with the bikes getting taken, you know, it's fairly... I don't know if I should even say this, but it's fairly common knowledge that, you know, quite a few teams aren't quite, you know, what they'll say they'll pay and what you actually end up getting is quite a different thing. You know, I've been relatively lucky throughout my career, you know, certainly in the PBM days anyway, of, you know, eventually getting everything you've been owed. But, you know, certainly with some of the teams that I've ridden for in World Championships before, there's a little bit of money outstanding. So you have to sometimes take matters into your own hands, and you know, bikes have to be taken as like a guarantee, and you know, it's not this is not a new thing, and it won't be an old thing either. I wouldn't have thought, you know, there'll be plenty of people up and down pit lane wanting to have some gentlemen turn up and make sure that they've got a bit of a guarantee that they get their money.
Let's talk about some title wins here, Shaky, over this weekend. Jack Kennedy, it was never really in doubt, was it, this year, that he was going to cement a second Supersport title in a row, apart from early on in the season, but certainly since about halfway through, it wasn't even questionable, was it?
Jack Kennedy, to put it into context, has had 18 wins this year. That is just utter domination. I mean, I like Jack. Jack and I get on really well. And, you know, it might be a bit biased of me to sit here and say what a great job he's done. But honestly, you can't get your head around the level of dominance that guy's had. Now, people say that winning a championship is difficult, and it is. You know, no British championship comes on the back of a cornflakes pack. You know, you don't just cut the little serrations out and all of a sudden become a British champion. You know, you have to earn a British championship. But, you know, Jack not only earned that British championship, but he defended it as well. And he defended it even more convincingly than he won it. And, you know, I always say that winning a championship is difficult, but defending it is even harder. And he's made both look an absolute piece of cake. And his reply to me actually on Twitter was that, you know, I love a bit of cake. I think that, you know, it's been an amazing job. And, you know, the rumour is that he's going to step up to Superbike with Yamaha. And I really hope that happens. And I really hope that they put, you know, a proper effort behind him, because he tried the Superbike class back in 16, was it? It was 17, maybe. And it didn't pan out for one reason or another. So let's hope this time when he steps up, he can show just how good a rider he really is.
Great title win for the 31-year-old Josh Day as well in the Ducati Tri-Options Cup. He's from Swindon, so well done. It could have been a very different story, but he came through today and won that one. Rob Guyver, I've just got to have a quick shout-out for Rob Guyver, because he was the champion last year, Shane. 18 years of racing, and he's decided to hang up the helmet and the leathers now. I think he'll be going home a very proud man, but he'll must be feeling a bit weird now, because that's sort of an era of Rob's life that gets put to one side now. What do you do now when you go about, I wonder, having made that decision to retire? How do you, you know, keep the brain active and keep yourself motivated with this part of your life gone, really?
I really don't know. And it's hopefully one that I'm not going to have to go through just yet. Rob has been the reference, I think it's fair to say, in the Ducati Cup for a while. But before we go into a different championship, I think one person that deserves a pretty special mention from this weekend that stood out to me a lot today was Rory Skinner.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
British Talent Cup winner last year, got absolutely nothing for it, which is just ridiculous. I mean, what's the point in MSV and Dorna putting together these kind of championships and then leaving the poor kid to start a GoFundMe page to, you know, to even be able to... I think it was Chris Walker that actually gave him a bike and got him back on the, you know, back into racing or whatever, but... You know, the Rory Skinner that we've seen today, to beat James Westmoreland to the podium, to take that third place, that was a pretty special ride. So hats off, Rory, well done. Hopefully that alone will lead to something a lot better for him for next season.
Well, that led to a chat actually in the press room again this afternoon. It rekindled a conversation that's been going on for a while. This is in stock 600, by the way, Rory Skinner taking his first podium. Who will the next new British world champion be, whether it's World Superbikes or certainly MotoGP? Because at the moment, there's a bit of a lack of guys up and coming, aren't there? I mean, young, really talented kids coming through. I mean, he could be one of them, I guess. But once Cal Crutchlow's retired and Jonathan Rea and Chaz Davis and the rest of them, who's it going to be?
It's a good question. And it's not something that we can answer in the short term. Because, you know, if a kid can go out and spend the season winning, you know, pretty convincingly in the British Talent Cup, you'd think he'd be doing that to get promoted into some sort of Moto3 championship or, you know, whatever championship that the thing was meant to have done. But it didn't happen, and I think that's far short. You know, you've paid a load of money to go and enter a race series to, you know, seemingly get the support of the, you know, of the two organisers, and then basically get told, yeah, great job, well done. There's a crappy little trophy, you're a British Talent Cup champion now. Do whatever you want to do. That was bad. That was badly handled. The Spanish and the Italians have a special way of getting their riders through, a way that the UK will never understand. And I think that You know, there's a big part of the UK that actually just wants to keep our riders in the UK. You know, we want our own little riders that are great in our championship and whatever else. But, you know, any young rider that starts on this journey not aspiring to be a world champion shouldn't even bother starting, in my opinion. You know, if you don't desire to be a world champion, then, yeah, what's the point in going racing? I still want to be a world champion now, and I'm sat here talking to you doing a podcast because I'm working for Eurosport, but it doesn't stop me wanting to be a world champion. So, yeah, I don't know what we've got to do, to be honest. And I don't know that it's something that's of particular importance to the people who could actually make it happen for our young riders. But, anyhow, what will be, will be.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe it's going to take one of the Brits to go out and live in Spain and come up through the CV or go through pre-Moto 3 in Italy or whatever.
Why should they have to do that?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's difficult to get your head around for me as somebody who's, you know, kind of coming towards the end of my career. You know, where is that next kid going to come from? You know, when the Spanish kids finish school and they go literally at sort of 3:30 after they finish school to like the local kart track and just have guys coaching and media training, the whole system's just absolutely perfect. But then, you know, motorbike racing and motorsport in general in Europe is far bigger than it is in, you know, if you want to be a footballer, then everybody will get behind you in the UK. And rightly so. You know, we created the game, if you like, and you know, we are the reference. You know, the Premiership is absolutely fantastic. The money that's involved in it is like off the scale. It was funny, actually, in the show today, Matt Roberts was promoting one of the English Open snooker, and the winner of that particular match or something, there was £1 million prize fund. And you just think, you know, how?
£1 million.
Yeah, listen, I'm taking nothing away from snooker players because, you know, I can't play snooker to save my life. I enjoy a game of pool. And I love to have a go at snooker, but it's so hard to do. So the likes of Ronnie O'Sullivan and all the superstars that we have that play snooker, you know, if you're at the top of your game, you deserve some money. But I tell you something, we joked about it actually earlier in one of the other podcasts when they put that £75,000 Integra Insurance prize fund up for six wins in this championship. I can't think of no more than four riders that even earned 75 grand. Perhaps we're in the wrong sport.
I was just thinking actually about our showpiece event in motorcycle racing is the British Grand Prix at Silverstone for MotoGP. Formula One, British Grand Prix at Silverstone. They're one of very few Grand Prix for MotoGP or F1 in the whole calendar that are not government funded. You know, they're privately funded by the BRDC essentially. Is it not a cultural thing maybe as well? You know, these other countries, their governments are getting behind them. You know, their presidents are often there at the races or prime ministers or whoever. There's no government funding going into our Grand Prix.
Well, I did actually ask Keenan Sofowoglu if he'd have a word with Boris Johnson for us because we spoke with him, and obviously Keenan, after, you know, he's prime minister or whatever, actually told him he had to stop racing because he kept hurting himself. And
it's the president, they're good friends.
The president, yeah. And he made him a parliamentary member. And, you know, it's Keenan's job. And he's like, I can't get out of it. You know, I have no choice. I have to do as I'm told. And I said to him, well, listen, you know, if you're sitting in parliament in Turkey, and if you look at, you know, Toprak, Razgat Lioklu's bike, the whole thing's just got Turkey or Turkish right up the side of it because the Turkish government fund the team.
And that sponsorship's going to Yamaha next year when he goes there as well, so they're taking it with him.
Well, exactly. And you know, I joke with him on screen. I said, any chance you can have a word with Boris and see if we can't get some funding for some young British riders to, you know, to make it through to, you know, either World Superbike or Moto3. And he laughed, and I think he declined politely.
Yeah, they've got to get Brexit sorted out first, haven't they? There's something. Imagine that being discussed, though, motorcycle racing in the House of Commons. It'd be good, wouldn't it?
Do you know what? I might actually make a bit of a run for Prime Minister. What do you reckon?
Well, there you go. Send your tweets in, everyone. Another alternative career there. Final thoughts, Shane, before we go. It's actually got dark, hasn't it, since we've been sat here? We were chatting with Fred Clark, the legendary BSB circuit commentator who can also be heard on BSB radio.
How long has he been commentating?
He celebrated a massive anniversary last year, didn't he? Is it this year?
52 years of commentating.
Amazing.
But do you know what? I actually asked him, didn't I? I said, oh, do you want to sit in on this podcast with us? But obviously he's been up here. Fred's 73, is he, or 74 years old?
Something like that.
He is the voice of you know, certainly of superbikes and Grand Prix and whatever else. And you know, the stories that guy can tell and the, you know, the vividness with which he tells them, you could listen to him all day long.
Yeah.
I could sit and listen to that guy's stories of Barry Sheen, of Kenny Roberts, of Mick Doohan, of Wayne Gardner, of, you know, there is not a story that he can't tell you. And you know that he's not lying. He is an absolutely amazing person. And what's going to happen in BSB, for instance, or you know, in the British Grand Prix, when Fred actually decides to switch his microphone off, I have absolutely no idea. You know, you talk about young British talent, you could be the next Fred Clark, you know. You are Captain Stat.
I know, but you're right, though. I mean, these guys are so interesting to talk to. Nick Harris, who I used to work with at Dorna, the MotoGP, Fred here, Jack Burnicle, Barry Nutley, the guys who've been doing it for longer than any of the rest of us. The stories they've got, the anecdotes they come out with, and the passion, that's what's fueled these careers to make them as successful as they are, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. All of those guys you've mentioned, I've got the utmost of respect for. You know, love talking to them. And, you know, they've seen and they've forgotten more than you and I have probably ever learned. And, you know, that's not me blowing smoke up the backside of somebody just for the sake of it. You know, Fred Clark, I have nothing but utter respect for that man. As straight and loyal, commentated on my first ever race. You know, hopefully he hasn't commentated on my last one. But, what an absolute legend.
And of course, the great Murray Walker himself, who, by the way, this Thursday, the 10th of October, is celebrating his 96th birthday, Shane. Of course, he's not commentating anymore, but happy birthday, Murray. But he's still involved and doing features on the TV and you know, radio interviews.
He still, if he came to France for BSB, he would still come to you with the same enthusiasm, you know, the same, like, admiration of you, you know, the same, just Murray, you know, just
my,
like,
hero, I have to say.
What an absolute legend.
Yeah, just passion. And people don't realise, obviously, Murray's remembered for all of his mistakes, wrongly, really, because, yes, he made mistakes, but in the latter years, people are intentionally waiting for them.
He should have seen my take on that track piece I did the other day. He would talk about mistakes.
It's true, is it? Like, you know, obviously, you'll get used to it as well, though, with the TV stuff and how many times it takes to do it and the work that you have to do to prepare. And people remember the times you get it wrong, but they don't remember the number of times you got it right. And Murray very often got it right.
Well, that's one of the things of racing and life in general, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, you can go out and you can win a million races. It's just when you finish second, you become the biggest, you know, has been or whatever in your life. I mean, I actually, my book's out next year, and I actually joke about the fact that, you know, you can do whatever you can do. And, you know, when you're winning, you're the greatest person. And it doesn't matter that you were 40, whatever years old. It doesn't matter that you've been around for a while. You know, you're the class act. You're the polished. You're the refined guy. You're the one who's done it week in, week out. Nobody can do it like you. And then all of a sudden, something can happen. You'll have a fourth. And all of those comments turn into, but he's, you know, he's 40 odd years old now. Yeah. What does he need to prove now? He's done it all. You know, he's going to start going off the boil. You can't have the same. And you just think, are you flipping, pulling? Yeah, well, I don't even want to say what I want to say.
Well selected words. Though.
Yeah, no, it's funny. But yeah, you quite often get remembered for the things you didn't do rather than the things you did. And as you say, Murray, you know, made a load of mistakes and he was famous for it, but everybody loves him for it.
Yeah, absolutely. But so often got it right as well. It's Argentina World Superbikes coming up this weekend. I believe you're going to be on hand in the new Eurosport studio because the Feltham era has ended. We've been based in Feltham, just outside Heathrow, for many a year. That's all changed now, a new Chiswick base. So new studio, new look. Looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I actually went down to Chiswick on Tuesday this week to meet the boss. To have a little chat, which was really good. You know, the new facility looks great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, actually. We're going to get there and do Argentina. And then we obviously go to Brands the weekend after. And then Qatar finishes off the six-week run that we've been on. And then that's those two championships done for the year. So really looking forward to Brands Hatch, finding out who becomes BSB champion. Obviously, we already know who's World Superbike champion and talking of utter domination, you know, what an amazing job he's done in the second half of the season. We'll see what Argentina brings and sign the year off in Qatar.
Shaky, thanks very much. I will speak to you over the airwaves, I guess, on the Argentina weekend.
Are you going out there? You're going to be like fully first class, business classed up. living the dream.
Absolutely, yeah. First class as always.
So I need to up my game, don't I? I need some of that media training and get me on those flights.
But no, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be good, isn't it?
Yeah, that should be great. Yeah, super exciting. A new track for Alvaro Bautista, actually, which will be good for him. And also a new track for Leon Haslam. He's never been there before either. So, you know, be interesting to compare those two to see who's done the best job over the course of the weekend.
Top Rack was good there last year as well. He got a podium.
Yeah, Top Rack's super strong at the moment, riding really well. He must be wondering what the future holds for him when he changes manufacturer. But a rough diamond, I think, is a great description of him. And, you know, immensely talented kid that is really fast. And I think that he's not like one of these guys that's been stuck in a class so long that he couldn't possibly adapt to a different type of bike or another manufacturer. And yeah, I'm sure we're going to see him go on to do great things and give his teammate a good run for his money.
Shane, thanks a lot for that. Penultimate Shaky Show of the season. Of course, we've got one more after Brands Hatch, but James Whittam and I will be back with a Full Throttle podcast from the Argentina commentary box next week. And Shaky, I'll speak to you when we're talking about a new BSB champion at Brands Hatch.
You certainly will, Greg. Thank you very much.
See you there.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.